You've read and heard from all the others. Now the real story on today's biggest topics. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Maybe not so much rumors anymore about a special session and what that will entail and how many things of the public interest are going to be discussed in that. Joining us now is Vincent Candelora, who is not only a lawyer, but he is the Connecticut State House of Representatives. He is a representative in the Connecticut House for District 86. He is in the middle of his seventh term, and the district includes Northford, Connecticut, North Guilford, Durham, and Wallingford. He is a leader in the Republicans, and I am told in what is a very loud whisper campaign that, Vince, you may be taking on the position currently held by Themis Claridis because she is no longer – she's not running for re-election. So I'm told, Vince, you may replace her as the leader in the State House for the Republicans. Is that public knowledge? Is that anything you want to confirm on WICC? Hello, welcome to the show, Vince. So nice to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it does look that way. Right now, I don't have any opponent, and I've received the unanimous consent of the current members. But, of course, the election doesn't occur until after November. So once we see how things play out, and God willing, I retain my seat, I will hopefully be the next leader.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful that you're willing to step up and do it. And we haven't had a chance to really meet. I apologize for that. Hopefully, you know, sometime in the distant future, we'll all be back in the studio and you can come in and sit with us at WYCC and say hello, because that's what I would really love. So, Vince, thank you for joining us today. So tomorrow is a 12-hour hearing. And I understand that on the agenda, we had Rosa Rabimba on a little while ago to take us through a little bit of the specifics of what we're talking about in terms of the redoing of some of our police accountability. I'd really like to hear from you what you think this bill is going to look like as it takes shape.
Well, I think generally speaking, and what Connecticut residents should realize is that we've been ahead of all the other states, I think, on police reform. Certain chokeholds were already banned through police training. We've already had reforms. We've encouraged and have funded the use of the body cameras. So there's been reforms put in place, and I think generally speaking, Connecticut doesn't have the problem that we may see in other states. The bill is trying to address and prevent police brutality, and in particular, the small minority of police officers that might be bad actors. I think globally speaking, one of the issues that we're having right now is if we're really interested in making sure that bad cops don't stay in the police force, we really have to reform the way the disciplinary process occurs. And that being specifically the way the union grievances occur. And it's frankly something that this bill doesn't even touch. And I think what we are doing is adding a layer, maybe well-intended, to allow for posts to discipline these officers if something occurs, but it doesn't get rid of the union process that protects bad officers. So ultimately, I don't think the bill is going to really be meaningful on that level, and we're going to add another level of bureaucracy to the process that actually might slow down the process and cause these bad actors to stay in the force longer. I think there's training pieces in the bill that is helpful, that's good. I think the third piece that's controversial, obviously, is the elimination of qualified immunity, which I think if that goes through in its current form, we are going to see a huge reduction in police forces across the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, we're talking with Vince Candelora. And let's explain what we mean by qualified immunity. What is the status quo on the law?
Sure. I mean, certainly current law, essentially a police officer is protected from personal liability for their actions. However, similar to under federal law, the 1982 claims. If you're acting outside the color of your authority, if you're acting recklessly with malice, you certainly could be sued still. So the qualified immunity is really protecting police officers who's making a discretionary decision. You know, for instance, if I was driving drunk, I get pulled over, the cop gets out, I jump out of the car and I take a swing at the officer. If the officer throws me to the ground and to restrain me and I break my jaw, under this bill, the police officer could be sued for that type of discretionary action. You know, was it violent? Yes. But was it called for? Probably, if I was attacking him. Under current law, the officers have protection for those type of decisions. And this really does open it up. And I don't know why anyone would want to be a police officer if that law is written the way it is.
You know what the problem is, Vince, as I'm listening to you, Vince Candelora, the reason I think, and this is where I think maybe there's some room to figure this out, the reason that there are people clamoring for getting rid of qualified immunity is because the law as written makes perfect sense, in the sense of you have to protect people's back for doing their job, but their back doesn't get protected when they don't do their job, right? So by
Correct.
Definition, excessive force is not doing their job. The problem is that there is a lack of faith and trust in the way the law is enforced, in the way the law is implemented. And that is what leads people to say, well, let's throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's not have any immunity for people. And I think where the rubber meets the road is, as you started out by saying, when there's a complaint against an officer for doing that bad behavior at the get-go, that's where there has to be more enforcement, because that's where the community trust is already being, that's where the community trust goes away. When there's a complaint against an existing police officer, and for whatever reason, that complaint never gets addressed. If more complaints were addressed of real misconduct, you wouldn't have people calling for getting rid of qualified immunity. Do you know what I mean?
That's absolutely correct, because, you know, I think the qualified immunity already accomplishes what people are looking for. They just don't realize it. Bad actors could be sued for that behavior.
Right.
And the other piece is, you know, similar to the Minnesota officer who had killed George Floyd, he had 18 complaints against him. So, you know, the state of Connecticut, that's one area that we have a perfect storm set up, because and this vote was on party lines. What the Democrats did through a collective bargaining agreement is they actually shielded all the personnel records of police officers from FOI through the union contract. And the Democrats supported it.
Why?
Because the union doesn't want the public to have access to officers' personnel records when they've been disciplined. So again, these unions, they're doing their job. They're protecting their employees. But the state of Connecticut, in my opinion, failed the public because they went along with that deal, and the Democrats supported it. Republicans in the legislature, we vehemently opposed that legislation, and that was one of the reasons. So this bill now is trying to fix that, to say, okay, going forward, we're going to allow for the freedom of information laws to trump union contracts. So no longer could the union supersede freedom of information laws. The problem is the statute will not amend the current collective bargaining agreement. And this is also part of the problem in Connecticut. So what they're saying is, you know, we put the cloak of secrecy over that process. Well, now we're going to put it back so there's transparency, which is good for the public. But because it's in the union agreement currently, we're going to leave it there. And it shows you how much power the unions have in the state of Connecticut. And the Democrats are not willing to put their foot down and say, that's a provision we're going to take out of collective bargaining. And we really should, because if an officer has been disciplined 6 times, we should be able to know about that. And right now we can't. And this law is not going to fix that.
That's interesting. So what I'm hearing is, so there's this traditional alliance politically between Democrats and unions. But there really isn't an alliance right now, at least in the political forums, between Democrats and the police. But when it comes to the Democrats and the police union, what you're saying is that that alliance has held, and it has not been necessarily for the benefit of the agenda of a lot of individual Democrats.
That's right. And it's a bizarre construct. And so we keep hearing about qualified immunity, and that's what everybody's talking about. What we really should be talking about is how we chip away at the stronghold, the protection that these bad actors have because the police unions protect them. That would be a better conversation for Connecticut to have.
And what would you want to see in the way of change? Everyone's entitled to due process of law. You're a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. You know that just because somebody complains doesn't mean they're always right. But on the other hand, we have cell phone footage and camera footage now that we didn't used to have in the way of very credible evidence. So what would you want to see, Vince Candelora, in the way of some of this union protection being diluted or changed?
So the bill provides for an inspector general to look into these cases. And what I would say is the investigations should be shifted out of the internal offices and put in the office with an inspector general who has a level of independence to the review and allow for that due process to occur outside of the umbrella of the union and the police department. Almost similar to like a superior court, and let that grievance be held there. And whatever determination is made, that's the final ruling. As an opposed to this internal process within the police departments, because I think that's how time and again the officers are able to remain on the job. And from a chief's perspective, it's difficult and costly, I think, for a town to continue to fight or go against a union. So if we take it out of the towns, and put it with the state, I think that would go a long way.
I think that would go a long way because right now it's a little bit of the fox guarding the hen house.
And
you have this internal affairs, which are reviled and hated by their own local police anyway. They can't do anything right. I think you're right. You're better off. And by the way, it gives cover to local police chiefs who very often don't want those people. I've interviewed police chiefs on the show, and I interviewed Mayor Mark Boughton of Danbury, and he says the single biggest problem as mayor of Danbury is getting rid of the bad police officers, and everybody knows who they are. But the union continues to protect them, and even the police chiefs locally are frustrated because they can't get rid of them.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's a good answer. So if we have this Office of Inspector General and investigations of excessive force are taken out of local police forces, it's probably better for everybody because then the process will do what it does. But the local police department can continue to function without feeling internally divided about the investigation.
That's right. And I think currently the bill adds a layer on. So we have the inspector general now. We have Post. So I think Post does the investigations. But again, it does not eliminate this internal local process. It still occurs. And so I think that's something that really needs to be flushed out through the public hearing tomorrow. And I do know there's just an unwillingness to interfere with collective bargaining. These issues are way too important. And I do believe that there are times where the legislature could interfere with collective bargaining. And I think this may be a time because if we're starting to go down a path of eliminating immunity for police officers in lieu of, I think, doing a proper due process investigation where officers can be removed, the system's going to begin to fail.
I agree. Yep.
I don't know of anybody who would be dumb enough at this point, not to be rude, but to be dumb enough to be a police officer if they could be sued every day they go to work.
Absolutely. And not only that, it's just making more money for personal injury attorneys. I mean, look who's going to stand to benefit from it. Just people that are going to go out and sue willy-nilly like any other slip and fall. They'll make a police officer an easy target to get one-third of a fee. That's not what we want, Vince Candelora. That's not what we want.
That's right.
Yeah, it's fine. Before I let you go, I'm so happy to get to know you a little bit. I did want to ask you, where do we stand with respect to absentee ballots and generally speaking for the November election in a special session? Tell us where we stand. Thank you.
So I think the absentee ballot issue is really a bipartisan issue. We need to give an opportunity for people who are high risk, who might be ill or in fear of being ill from the virus, the opportunity to vote by absentee ballot. And I think there's universal agreement on that. One of the sticking points that I have is these drop boxes that our Secretary of State has delivered, and they're setting them up all over town hall. It's a concern that we're breaking the custody of chain of an application. When you get your application under current law, you either need to mail it in to the town clerk or mm-hmm. you deliver it to the town clerk in person. Okay. And we're adding this third step of a drop box with no guidelines put in place. These boxes are fairly easily to be tampered with. And I'm more concerned not so much with people stuffing them, but vandalizing them. So we're not even sure your ballot gets delivered to the town clerk. You know, if it's sitting there in a box for a week and somebody comes mm-hmm. by and throws a match in it and ballots burn. So we need to, I think, have more specificity on a chain of command. They should be emptied every day. I would recommend they be dropped off from 9 to 5 and maybe locked after 5 o'clock. So people, you know, they're empty at night when mischief could occur. Those are the parameters we need to get in place. And I think we've got to get rid of them after the election, because I just don't think drop boxes, we're inviting a lot of problems with that. And so that's probably our biggest sticking point right now.
Okay. Well, Vince Candelora of Brantford and Guilford, Durham, and all these other areas, thank you very much for being on the show today. Really much appreciated. Very nice to get to know you. I look forward to meeting you in person one of these days. And thank you very much for being on the show. Thank you.
Thanks
Vince
for
Candelora.
Having me.
A pleasure. Vince Candelora, The Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.